Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
Live from Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville, Westchester Talk Radio presents Talking Real Estate with host Leah Caro. Talking Real Estate brought to you by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Hightower Westchester, White Plains Hospital, Westchester County Office of Economic Development, and Robeson. Don't forget, you can download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes through the App Store at Westchester Talk. Like us on Facebook at Westchester Talk Radio, and please follow us on Instagram. We are at Shark Creative. My name is Jim Cleefield, and now here's your host, Leah Caro.
Thanks, Jim. It's Leah Caro, of course. We're talking real estate with Leah Caro, and we're broadcasting from our headquarters for Park Sterling Realty on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. We do serve Westchester, Putnam, and Bronx counties. And welcome to what I think is our eighth edition of Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. And, you know, every month we work hard to bring great real estate insights and market overviews, plus the most interesting guests who work in the fields related to home ownership or home selling or home buying. Experts in topics like assessment or decorating or home inspections, home improvement contractors, and things like that. And today, of course, is no exception. And in just a little bit, we'll be joined by Paul Ranieri of the D.C. Ranieri Insurance Agency to talk all things homeowners insurance with us. So I'm really looking forward to that. So stay tuned, and we'll be to Paul in just a bit. Now, if you've missed any of our previous shows, and they've been really good, I have to tell you, you can always get the podcast at either westchestertalkradio.com or download the Westchester Talk Radio app at the iTunes store. Now, so for my usual disclaimers, as we always start, if you have real estate needs or questions and you are working with a realtor, please call your realtor. If you don't have a realtor, call me. And also, let me always remind you that real estate is local. Actually, what we would call it is hyper-local, and that every market is different. So to understand what's really happening on your street, in your town, you should be talking to your realtor. And again, if you don't have a realtor, you should be talking to me. So where are we in the market? Well, lately, there's been a lot of hubbub in the news, headlines that read things like Westchester market, real estate market plunges. And there's been some statistics out in the marketplace that have gotten a lot of second looks, and a lot of people are shaking their heads and saying that doesn't sound quite right. So as a result, there's been a big backlash, and there's been a lot of advertising and newscasts and media reports about how, no, everything is just fine here in Westchester real estate. Well, which is it? Is it awful or is it great? And the answer is, depends. A very clear-cut depends. So we've been saying for months and months that it's here in Westchester County that it's a tale of two markets. And we've been saying for months that the mid-range, and for the sake of conversation, we've been defining the mid-range as a million and under, that the mid-range has very, very low inventory, that there's more buyers out there than there are properties to buy, and that it's been a frenzy of buyers racing to buy the houses available. And so what we're describing that is it's a very true seller's market. That the high end, and what we're describing the high end, is at a million and above, inventory has been up. And, you know, and it was last spring, because here we are winding down August, right? So in the spring, inventory was the highest we'd seen in a decade in most of these markets. And it was, and prices were getting some downward pressure as a result of that. And buyers were getting some good deals. Now, that being said, inventory is down in the high end right now, which is a good thing, but it's not necessarily as a result of sales. What we are seeing is some homeowners who have put their houses on the market. The market has not responded favorably to the price at which they were asking, and those sellers have said, well, you know what? I'm not willing to reduce and settle for the price that the market is willing to offer, so I'm going to take my house off the market. And, of course, some of the houses have sold. So between the houses that have sold and the folks who have taken them off, inventory is down, and that's a good thing, because when inventory goes down, theoretically, prices eventually do go up. And you know what? All the folks who were on the market and don't want to sell, I'm glad you're off the market. Get out of the way and let the folks who really would like to sell not have to suffer from the downward pressure on pricing that all of that inventory created. So, it's still a tale of two markets. But what the big takeaway is when people are talking about Westchester market being great or being awful, a lot of the conversation revolves around the new tax plan. And there's been a lot of conversation about how the new tax plan is just ruining Westchester real estate. And, you know, frankly, without getting political about it, no, I'm not a fan at all of the new tax plan. I think it's very damaging to New Yorkers, and I think it's damaging to Westchester County in that we are being asked to pay more than our fair share for the federal budget. And I do support Governor Cuomo's efforts to go after the federal government to have it amended. So that being said, I don't think it's terrific. But Westchester is still a terrific place to call home, and people are always going to want to live here. And that is, I think, demonstrated perfectly by the buyer frenzy for the houses in the mid-range. There's not enough houses for them to buy, and they really want to buy them. And I think if they were, if the real estate market was destroyed because of the tax plan, we wouldn't see buyers lining up to buy homes. Then at the high end, people always, it's not new, folks, people have always said, the last kid is out of the house, and I'm not interested in paying taxes anymore, the high taxes anymore. And historically, those empty nesters have always sold their homes. So the empty nesters who are selling now to get out of the high tax situation they might be in, that's not new. And if there was a panic to get out because of the tax plan, I think we would see more sellers reducing until the market responded. And we wouldn't see these folks that we were just talking about who were taking their houses off the market. They're taking them off because, I would like to sell, but I'm not willing to sell right now, at least, at any price. So I would have to argue with the folks saying that the tax plan is destroying the Westchester real estate market is not so. So that is my takeaway for the market update for the end of August here, 2018, our eighth show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get Paul suited up, and we're going to have Paul Ranieri, DC Ranieri Insurance Agency, joining us. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro.
At Indian Point, we've helped power Westchester and New York City for about four decades. Recently, as part of an agreement with New York State, we are working toward an early and orderly shutdown of the facility by 2021. Until then, we'll continue safely generating about 25% of the reliable, round-the-clock electricity that powers the city and Westchester, all with virtually no greenhouse gas emissions. Safety is, as it always has been, the top priority for everyone at the plant. We will continue to keep Indian Point fully staffed, and full-time inspectors from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission will monitor our daily operations. We'll also continue to play an important role in our community, as a taxpayer and active participant in local charities. Indian Point Energy Center is still working for you, and it's our honor to continue to serve the people of New York. If you have questions about our ongoing operations, please visit safesecurevital.com.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit safesecurevital.com.
Welcome back to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. I, of course, am Leah Caro, and we are broadcasting right now from our headquarters on Park Place, Park Sterling Realty's headquarters, of course, on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. Sitting with me, and I couldn't be more excited, is Paul Ranieri, the president of DC Ranieri Insurance Agency, to talk to us all things homeowners insurance. So welcome, Paul.
Thank you so much, Leah, for inviting me. Appreciate it very much.
We're glad to have you. So we're going to, folks, you can do one of two things. You can go grab a pen and paper right now because you're going to want to take notes, or you can just remember to listen to the podcast on westchestertalkradio.com, or you can download it at the iTunes store, because you're going to get information today that you're going to go, oh, I've always wondered about that, and what a great tidbit that'll save me money. Just stuff we've all should or maybe should have known about homeowners insurance and didn't.
Sure. So, knowledge is power. That's
knowledge is power, brother. So let's start with, in very broad strokes, what does homeowners insurance cover?
So good question. We find that homeowners insurance is basically three or four major components. So it's the structure of the dwelling itself, the walls, the roof, the ceiling, all that. You have your internal contents coverage, your clothing, couches, chairs, furniture, TVs, and so forth. Your liability coverage in case somebody trips and falls or somebody gets hurt, either on your premises or off your premises. And then, say, God forbid, there's a fire and you have to live somewhere else out of the home, that additional living expense. Those are the four main parts of the homeowner's policy.
Good to know. And so, and for most of the listeners, I think, would know, or maybe they don't, in order to get a mortgage and to buy a house in the first place, you have to have homeowner's insurance. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
You can't even get financing if you don't have it.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, most of the financial, or all the financial institutions that we deal with, do require the homeowner's insurance to some level of degree. Yes.
And if someone is paying cash for their house and not getting a mortgage, would someone be very, they'd be foolish, I imagine, to say, I don't need insurance, right? Nobody's making me get it, so.
Right, yeah, there's different ways, if you're concerned about the cost, you know, there's different ways to structure it so that you can get it to fit what you want it to do. If you want to be the risk taker and absorb and you become sort of the insurance company, that's fine. There are areas, though, you may want to consider to really have a third party handle it, like an insurance company.
So you talked about, in broad strokes, it insures the physical space, the building, the materials it's made out of. And I want to ask you a question about that in a minute. And you talked about it protecting the contents, and you said the TV and the couch and your clothing and stuff. What about jewelry? I hear about like jewelry riders and expensive diamonds and things like that. Can you talk about that?
Sure, sure. So basically, your most policies will cover some minimal amount of jewelry, watches, furs, silverware, those sort of collectibles. And the proper way to insure those would be to schedule them and most of the times get an appraisal for them, or at least have a separate schedule listing that item, listing that description of what it is, what the value is, so that in the event of a loss, there's no question.
And I've also, rumor has it that doing that is very expensive.
No, not at all. To insure fine art, some antiques that you may have, sometimes, say, for this local area, $10,000 could be as low as $15 or $20 a year. Jewelry in this area for every $10,000 could be maybe $100, $150 a year. For every $10,000.
That's actually way more affordable than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. So if I get mugged and my diamond ring gets stolen, that's covered by my homeowner's insurance?
It would be covered with the homeowner's, and the best case scenario would be to have it scheduled so it's described, the value is there, the description is there, and it covers it worldwide. Whatever happens, whether, God forbid, you get robbed or you leave it or it falls down the sink or something.
God forbid. So, you know, a lot of the houses I see around here have beautiful wine cellars. And many of them have, in those wine cellars, very nice wine collections. Is that something scheduled as well?
It would be best to schedule it. I mean, some policies will offer some coverage for that, but in the event of a catastrophe, people aren't thinking clearly, so we always suggest just get it scheduled, and if the inventory changes often, you know, I'm sure you just keep it up to date, but the best thing would just be to schedule those, yeah.
And I can do it in broad terms, because if I insure a very expensive bottle of wine and then one evening drink it, I no longer need coverage for that.
That's true.
Excellent.
That's true.
So, and then you talked about liability for people getting injured in the house and out of the house. What do you mean by out of the house?
Sure. A lot of times people can be very active and they may be playing tennis, playing golf, walking down the street with an umbrella. They poke somebody in the eye with an umbrella by accident, and somebody will sue, chances are. You're out on the golf course, hit somebody with a golf ball or tennis, and hit somebody with a tennis racket, and it's a good chance that you could be involved in a lawsuit.
And that would fall under my homeowner's insurance.
That's correct.
Very interesting. And, you know, when I play golf, which is really rarely and very poorly, I do get a lot of mulligans, but I'm hoping not to ever womp someone with a golf ball. So let's go back to the structure of the house. And you and I talked a little bit about this earlier before we were on the air. The materials used go toward determining the value of the home and therefore the cost of the insurance. So, for example, a slate roof versus an asphalt roof. How does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. So a lot of times the way a house was built, when it was built, the materials used, 2x4s, when they were 2x4s, now they're you know, obviously smaller. So you'll see the cost of construction on the older homes are usually much higher cost per square foot. And so what we try to do is just at least gauge that. So the newer construction can have a different value because it doesn't have the say, for example, a Tudor home with a slate roof and those different features that they'll have with the stucco, some real craftsmanship in the flooring. So you want to make sure you value it correctly, that you have enough insurance to replace it exactly the way you had it before.
Right. So if God forbid, my house burned down, I couldn't afford ever to build it the way it was built in 1925 using those same materials. So that's the value I want to give it. So if I had to rebuild it in today's dollars, using those materials.
Yes, that's right. And there are companies that will pay to replace that exact, you know, oak or maple or walnut flooring. They'll go out there and get that. Some will do a like-kind and quality situation.
Sure, that's really good to know. So, oh, I just did my kitchen. People who've been listening to the show for a while now have heard all about it. So I've recently redone my kitchen. I hadn't even thought of updating my homeowner's insurance. Is that something I should do and think about? And how often should people think about updating it?
Updating it every, I would think every couple of years or after a major renovation like that, because you do want to make sure if today's day, a kitchen, a bathroom, it's big money, and you want to make sure you have it insured properly, that you didn't over or put an addition on your home and didn't account for it. So it's always good to reach out to the company, your insurance agent, just to have that conversation to see. They could do a quick assessment to see if there's enough insurance, or maybe we need to make an adjustment.
Great. And so every couple of years, people, you know, it's like one of those things they should just do automatically is update, make sure that their home's value and the, what they've done to it or what's in it is matching their policy.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. And in market fluctuations, and we've been talking extensively over the few months about what homes are worth. So, but do market real estate market fluctuations affect what it might be worth? Doesn't affect my homeowner's insurance, does it?
Great question, because a lot of times a client will say, well, gee, this house you're insuring for more than what I paid for it, or I want more insurance on it because I think it's worth more. It really comes down to a cost per square foot. So you can put that same home in a very distressed area. I'm trying to think. There aren't many around in Westchester or the Bronx.
Not too many, right.
But you would want to make sure you have the right amount of insurance based on what it would cost to rebuild, cost per square foot. That's really the determining factor, not so much what you paid for the home, what you can sell it, what the city or town assesses it for. That really has no correlation.
Good to know. I'm learning so much from you, Paul. We're so happy to have you here. So hurricane season. Now, it did start on June 1st. It ends theoretically on December 1st. So we're right in the heart of hurricane season, and we've been blessed so far. We haven't had any weather headed our way. I know out in Hawaii right now, they're bearing down. Well, there's a hurricane bearing down on them, mm-hmm. But we've gotten lucky so far. But I'm not convinced we're not going to have a hurricane. So tell me about if the trees in my yard get blown onto my house. I always hear about acts of God and things mm-hmm. like that. How does that work?
Okay, so there's a couple of scenarios that can happen, but let's just say the first scenario is you have a homeowner's policy. If a tree falls on that home, realistically, whatever tree, your tree, a neighbor's tree, the city, a city's tree, your insurance company should pay for the damage to repair your home and partial removal for the tree to some expense. They'll pay for that tree removal. So that's the sort of the main factor right there. If, for example, your tree falls on your neighbor's tree, the same scenario.
On the neighbor's house?
On the neighbor's house. Okay. I'm sorry. Thank you. Not thinking clearly there. Your tree falls on your neighbor's home. Your neighbor's homeowner's policy should pay for that. Now, the only situation where it could come back to you is if that neighbor said, listen, Leah, that tree is dead. That tree's dying. And I sent you a certified letter saying that tree's dangerous. You should take it down. And you just say, poo-poo, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to listen. I'm just going to just do whatever I want to do. Well, now you're putting yourself in a liability situation. So now you're going to be assuming some sort of responsibility because you were notified of a situation, a dangerous situation, didn't do anything about it. And now something happened. So in that case, you can be involved. Other than that, if it's a living tree, healthy tree, we have some crazy weather, your tree falls on a neighbor's, it's going to be basically the neighbor's homeowner's policy that's going to respond.
So you know what we're going to do today? We're going to bust some myths. We're going to be myth busters today, because I had always heard that kind of a myth that if a tree fell on your house or your neighbor's house or any of during like a hurricane, that it was act of God and no, your insurance would not cover it. So that's baloney.
That is total baloney. That's
so
right.
So myth one is busted. Good
yes,
to know.
Yeah, correct.
I'm thrilled to hear that. I really am. Let's talk about, you and I offline had also talked about generators, but we didn't quite develop that conversation. What did you want to tell me about generators?
Right, so there are a lot of, especially with technology going on these days, there's so many areas that safety is becoming more of an issue. And so whether you have a burglar alarm system, fire alarm system, a backup generator, you have a water detection system, temperature detection system, where if the temperature goes too low in your home while you're away on vacation, that detects that maybe the heat is off and a pipe could possibly freeze. So all these new technologies are opportunities for credits on your insurance. And so that's what we look at. We try to make sure, you know, are you receiving all those credits? You know, the generator, do you have an alarm system, a water flow detection system? Lightning, you know, if a lightning detection system is put in place that has a rod and it's totally grounded, you know, there are certain credits that are available for people that can look to save some money.
Well, I do want to get deeper into credits in 1 second, but, you know, you said something interesting about the insurance mm-hmm. for, the generators, I'm
yes.
sorry. If I have a generator that is not put through my C of O, if I have one of those external generators that I just plug in, does that count?
So companies do vary, but typically that would not, because it usually has to either turn on automatically or at least easy enough that it can just be done without, you know, involving you obviously having electricity, but I mean some sort of gasoline. A lot of them now are gas powered,
right.
And so they have backup themselves. So some are, you know, fuel, but most of them are, I've seen, are the gas ones. And it needs to be able to be switched on either automatically or you just have to go into the house and switch it on.
So my Home Depot generator is good to go.
Yep. That
good. To, okay. And I didn't mean to get all distracted mm-hmm. on that, but you really had my brain just swirling with questions. And with all the new technology on phones, whether it be a Nest that's at my house mm-hmm. or even Alexa, right, all of that is a benefit to my homeowner's insurance because I can keep an eye on my house. I can adjust the temperature of my house
mm-hmm.
And I can adjust my security settings.
Right. And you'll be notified if, say, that you're away on vacation, the temperature is dropping in your house and you're concerned about pipe coming back from winter break and your pipes are frozen and there's water all over your house. So then you'd be notified. You can, you know, call the appropriate party and also...
So listen up, folks. When you insured your house, if you did not have that cool technology that we've all since, you know, totally adapted in the last couple of years, like a Nest or like your iPhone settings or like your Alexa or any of those things, go check out your policy because that right now, I mean, Paul just saved you money right now. So we are going to take a quick break. Then we're going to do more money saving tips. And then we're going to do a whole bunch of other topics. So Paul Ranieri is with us. You're listening to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro.
When considering a building or renovation project, you need someone on your side. An experienced and knowledgeable company with expertise in planning, budgeting, organization, and control. Whether the project is a house, a school, a retail location, or an office building, you need Reverso Associates on your side. They're focused on two things: to provide or assist in the management of building programs from the earliest planning through occupancy, and to provide a flexible, experienced management consulting capability specializing in the needs of the construction industry. With a staff of architects, engineers, construction managers, estimators, construction accountants, schedulers, draftsmen, and other specialists, and with experience from over 1,000 projects, Reverso Associates can meet your needs effectively. When deciding on any type of construction project, or if a project is heading in the wrong direction, you need the expertise and experience of Reverso Associates on your side. Call for a consultation, 914-723-3474, or visit reversoassociates.com. Reverso Associates, a team of experts to get the job done.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. I, of course, am Leah Caro. We are broadcasting live from Park Sterling Realty's headquarters on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. We serve Westchester, Putnam, and Bronx counties. With me today is Paul Ranieri of DC Ranieri Insurance Agency. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
Welcome
back.
And what we've been talking about is homeowners insurance, tips and secrets and ways to save money. And right before we went to break, Paul was cluing us in about all the great new technology, whether it's Nest or your iPhone or your Alexa or your security cameras or your sensors or all of that stuff that's in our house will save you money on your homeowner's insurance. So thank you for, you just saved me money.
Great. Glad to help.
So now there's all these other discounts out there that people may not be aware of. They may not know to ask, or maybe their homeowner's insurance company didn't ask mm-hmm. and maybe should have. And I recently heard of something called a stay-at-home discount.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, sure. A lot of companies are starting to recognize that when a person is either retired or stay at home, that the chance of something happening, or when something does happen, it gets addressed immediately or quickly. So the chance of a further or extended loss is minimized. So a lot of companies will try to recognize that and will give a discount for, say, a retired person or somebody that's going to be at home or au pair, so that they know that someone's always there in case something happens.
So a stay-at-home parent, an au pair or nanny, right, mm-hmm. or a retired person, all count for the stay-at-home discount.
Different companies have different credits for that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful. And is there, I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of amount of hours someone has to be home during the week or during the day.
That's right, yes. It's basically, most of the companies will want to see that the person is fully retired, that they're not, working part-time again. They want somebody there, you know, most of the day, so to make sure you get the full credit.
But folks, if you're listening and you have someone, either an au pair or a nanny, or you yourself are home most hours of the day. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can run errands. Yes, you can go to the supermarket.
Yes.
Yes, you can pick your kids up or whatever you need to do. But if you are not leaving the house every day 9 to 5, or you're a retiree, this is a great discount to get. And you might not have been asked about that by your company because you're maybe not working with Paul, or your company isn't offering it yet, but that there's another way to save money.
Yes,
I think that's great. Is there any other tips for saving money that people might not be aware of, the technology and the stay-at-home discounts?
I think, especially with a lot of people doing renovations on their home, a lot of companies recognize if you've replaced your electric and your plumbing and done some major renovations, a lot of companies will offer discounts for that as well. They recognize that a home that has been updated fully is less prone to accidents, pipe bursting, or fires. So they try to recognize that and will look to try to do a discount on that as well. We're seeing, besides the alarm systems, the burglar alarms, the fire alarms, the low temperature situations, and the renovations, those are the main ones we're seeing. If you live in a gated community, we're seeing that sometimes, or if you, we haven't gotten to the co-ops and condos yet, but we'll touch on that. There's some discounts for those as well.
Excellent. Now, down here in Bronxville, mm-hmm. we are living in the land of municipal water and sewer. But, you know, we serve all of Westchester County and Putnam County, which is living often in the land of septic and well water. Mm. How does that work for homeowners insurance?
So the homeowner's policy will respond, whether it be, you know, a septic or so it depends on what happens. So if a septic system fails because of age, wear and tear is always an excluded item on the policies. But we've had such situations where your water pump, if you have a well system and that pump is struck by lightning, there's coverage for that. So you'll see a lot of companies will respond in those situations. And if there's a water backup of a sewer drain, again, it could be either a sump or a well, most policies will respond for that as well.
In a little bit, we're going to talk about looking at homes from a buyer's perspective and what mm-hmm. it means for homeowners insurance. But real quickly, I do want to touch on that. Does it matter for homeowners insurance costs based, and I know there's so many variables in that, so this is a big blanket statement, I guess I'm asking, blanket question. Is it as a buyer, am I looking for sewer over septic or municipal water over a well from a homeowner's insurance perspective?
So the insurance companies do factor in their cost of insurance based on the fire protection. That's one of the factors. So if there's a fire hydrant nearby, if there's a paid fire department available, you know, that would put you in a better category as opposed to, you know, something way further up at the line where it's they have to bring a truck full of pump water, or some companies will even look if you have a pool or a pond, they may look to say that could be a water source. So that's a potential option. If you're up there and you have no sort of a volunteer fire department, but you have a pool or a pond, that's something that some companies will give a credit. You may have to attach a sort of a valve to it, because if the weather freezes and that pond freezes, then there still has to be a way to access that water. So there are systems that can be done for that as well.
That's really interesting. And you also just segued beautifully for me into talking about, here comes another myth, or mm-hmm. maybe not. You mentioned a swimming pool or a pond, because that could be a great source of water in a region where there's not ready water for fire departments. I have always heard that having a pool, and I guess let's throw pond in there as well, is a nightmare for homeowners insurance because of the liability.
So it is an attractive nuisance, but the companies now, and most municipalities require that it be protected. So as long as it's fenced and or if it's above ground or below ground, you know, that there is protection, the companies are fine with that. Where they do have issues more so I've seen lately is with the trampolines. That's becoming a real hot button, or has been over the years. Becoming a mecca for young children to get hurt, broken arms and bones, and your friend that was your friend, your neighbor, is now, you know, handing
not so much
handing you a lawsuit paper.
So do you suppose most people who have trampolines tell their insurance companies they do?
You know, I think they do, because I think, you know, you're filling out a form, and we always advise clients, listen, we just need to be totally transparent about it, because if you say you don't have one or don't have something, you don't have a pit bull, and, you know, you do have a pit bull, and you've had it for 10 years, and you sign a contract, and God forbid something happens, the company can look and say, listen, you signed this document, you know, there's a problem.
And any injuries as a result would not be covered.
The company could potentially... decline, correct.
So any increase in a premium which might result because of a trampoline is probably a fraction of the lawsuit that someone will be facing that they won't be covered for.
That's right.
If they fail to say so.
Right. Yeah, the situations the companies, you know, will look at. You signed a contract, you signed a document, it's a legal document, and you want to make sure the information on there is accurate.
So penny foolish or pound foolish, right? Penny
yes. Line.
So you busted one myth for me, which was the fact that swimming pools are a super expensive nightmare for insurance companies.
No.
Myth number two. Busted. Good to know. It really is. But trampolines I'd also heard about, and so that one is true.
Yes.
And you just mentioned pit bulls. Let's talk about dogs.
Right. And again, nothing. I have some great friends with dogs and all different varieties. And not, but, you know, there are certain breeds, right, that some companies have just had terrible luck with. And so, and it could be a situation that you have. If the dog is bite prone, then, you know, just want to make sure we either disclose that or advise the company what type of dog you do have, because they will just look at that. All companies have different guidelines or what dogs they accept. Some love all dogs, some have some restrictions on them.
So if someone is insured with a company that charges a higher premium because they own a pit bull, let's say, that could be, yes? And the pit bull then dies, as sad as that is, dogs die. So the dog dies, they should then be checking back in with their homeowner's company, right? To tell
that's
them,
right.
I don't have the dog anymore.
That's right. I don't have this. I don't have that. You know, that situation, that exposure is no longer there. So there could be an adjustment, or you may be eligible for another company or a different plan within that company to save some money.
Are there other pets besides, I know there's specific breeds, and we're picking on pit bulls, and I don't mean to do that. There's probably other breeds as well.
Oh, yeah.
That get singled out. Are there other types of animals that get singled out?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think when you
big,
were asking.
Giant pythons or baby Siberian tigers, Matt's saying alligator.
I think it's funny. I think the question reads, are there any pets or exotic animals or something along those lines? So I guess they do want you to disclose that. I haven't seen that lately in my years, but I'm sure there's been a few interesting creatures.
Are there any breeds of dogs where it's a benefit to your insurance? That ones that may be acting as protection?
Companies have not gone that route to have any discounts for a particular pet. I've
okay.
not seen that.
So any other red flags, the trampoline, some breeds of dogs, the swimming pool, not so much, we've just learned. But any other kind of big red flags that people may have in their homes that could affect the value or the premiums for their homeowners?
The use of your home, if you have a one-family home and maybe you've decided to convert it to a two-family. So that just brings up a few flags. I think this people need to be aware of what's the best way to do that. You definitely want to disclose it. If you have a two-family, you convert it to a three-family, whether it's legal or not, you know, that's another conversation. But we just want to make sure it's insured properly so that you don't have a problem in the event of a loss.
Excellent. Now, earlier you promised we'd talk about co-ops and condos, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about renter's insurance too, so it's time. So, because we have been talking about primarily single-family housing insurance, mm-hmm. so let's talk about co-ops and condos. I'm going to do 2 seconds on what's the difference as far as real estate goes. Mm-hmm. So, a condo or a co-op is a type of ownership, not necessarily the way something is built. You can have what looks to be a single-family house, for all intents and purposes, but is in fact a condo or a co-op. You can have high-rise apartments, garden apartments, things that look like townhouses. All of those could be condo or could be co-op. It really goes to the type of ownership. Condos, you tend to own your walls, your windows, and just not the land you're sitting on. And the land you're sitting on, you pay taxes on it. Co-ops, on the other hand, you own shares in a corporation, of course. And as it's been explained to me, you own everything kind of from the walls in. So using that as kind of our baseline, right? I'm going to say to Paul, all right, now tell me how that all works for insurance.
Sure, great. So the what we want to make sure when we are analyzing a policy or a co-op condo is that the client looks at the improvements either they've done to it or that somebody else has done to it, or what would it cost to replace that kitchen and bathroom. So there is sort of going back to that four items of coverage on a homeowner's policy. There's the dwelling or improvements and betterments that you've done to your condo or co-op unit. So you want to make sure those are insured properly. And then there's your contents again, how much furniture and clothing do you have in there? And then the loss of use will still be there as well. If you can no longer live there, there's a fire in the building, you have to live somewhere else. So that coverage will be there. And the liability is important because now it's not just you yourself. Somebody walks into your premises. It's now you cause some damage, a fire in the unit, and now you have, you know, 50 other units deciding to sue you because the fire was your negligence. You left the frying pan on there cooking too long, or you left the water running in the tub and it overflowed and damaged 10 units down below. So that's when the liability really becomes key.
Because of the shared spaces in a co-op, in a condo, hallways and lobbies and maybe even recreation, that has nothing to do with my homeowner's policy.
That's right. The master policy will usually come into play and pick up that exposure. So part of your monthly rent or
common charges.
Yes, thank you. That'll go to paying those, the building itself. So there's a fire to the building will be put back, and then you're going to be responsible, as you mentioned before, the paint in sort of situation.
Now, so Park Sterling Realty is a full service real estate company. We sell houses and we sell co-ops and we sell condos and we deal with a lot of landlords and a lot of tenants. And yes, we do see leases where the landlord is requiring insurance, but often we don't. And so what we're going to do is concentrate on that underserved population, the tenant, when we get back. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro.
Your booth is one of many at a trade show. So how do you get yours to stand out? How do you improve your ROI? How do you generate high-value show leads? You call Skyline Genesis Event Marketing, experts at producing world-class trade show displays, providing solutions designed to give your company's booth and brand an edge, to make your exhibit compelling, to craft an event experience like no other. Boost your trade show ROI, supercharge your lead generation, and give your company the advantage it deserves. Learn more about Skyline Genesis Event Marketing at skylinegenesis.com.
Somers to Yonkers, Tarrytown to Portchester.
We've got Westchester covered.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. I, of course, am Leah Caro, and we are broadcasting live from Park Sterling Realty's headquarters on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. We service all Westchester, Putnam, and Bronx counties. And with me today is Paul Ranieri of DC Ranieri Insurance Agency. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we've spent the last 40 minutes or so talking about homeowners insurance, about tips and tricks for discounts, about things that might increase your policy, about what it's how it works in co-ops and condos, and just kind of all things homeowners related. And right before we went to break, we had just started to talk about renters insurance, because I do think renters may have some misconceptions about renters insurance. We deal, we're a full service company, and we deal with landlords and tenants a lot. What we don't do is prepare leases, because that would be the unlicensed practice of law. So landlords are kind of on their own to produce their own lease and or have their attorney produce their lease. And we do see from time to time leases that require tenants to have renters insurance, but we don't always. Mm-hmm. What are the benefits of renter's insurance? What does it cover? What does it not? And, tell us all about it.
Yeah, renter's insurance is fine. I think it's very important, and I'm surprised a lot of people don't, more people don't have it. And so for a small apartment, we've seen prices or costs as low as $150 to $200 a year. So it really isn't, I don't think it's an expense issue. Just education, just people understanding what it does cover. So it does cover some of the items we talked about before, such as contents, your personal property, your couches, your chairs, your clothing. It also would cover if there was a fire in that apartment and now you had to vacate, there's some loss of additional living expense. And I think the most important is again, back to the liability situation. You're in an apartment, something happens that's caused by your negligence, in the apartment or outside the apartment, again, playing golf, playing tennis, and there's that liability coverage that's there.
So if I am a tenant in an apartment and I leave the frying pan on the stove, to use your example from earlier, or I leave the bathtub running, any damage to the greater, let's say I'm in a multifamily house, any damage to the bigger part of the house is covered by my $200 a year policy?
Correct. That's right. If you're negligent, your fault, and there's 10 units down below, you're on the top floor, and they're coming after you for $50,000 in bills, as long as you have enough liability insurance, that's what's going to respond in that situation.
So it seems crazy not to have it.
Totally agree with you. Totally,
yeah, related agree. To 10. Now, I've always had it, actually, when I was a tenant. Now I've had my own home for a long time, but back when I was a kid and I was renting apartments, someone said to me, Leah, here's the best reason to have tenants insurance. If your car gets broken into and they take your 8-track tape player, not to date myself too much, but or they take whatever's in your car. These days they're going to steal your iPhone, your Easy Pass, whatever. Your tenant's insurance covers that as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. The only caveat I would say is, so you have an option on those policies to cover off-premises theft or no off-premises theft coverage. So if you purchase the off-premises theft coverage, then you will be covered in that situation. Something in your car, you go shopping, you're traveling on vacation, all your luggage is stolen, your skis, your golf clubs. You know, that could be covered if you have off-premises coverage. That could be covered subject to your deductible. If you don't have the coverage, then it would just be the items stolen in your apartment.
And that's, I guess, the same holds true for homeowners insurance.
That's correct. Off-premises theft or not, yes.
Right, because I remember it was a very rude awakening for me back when I was a kid a million years ago, that if someone broke into my car and stole my things, my car insurance didn't cover it. Mm-hmm. My homeowner's does, or in that case,
it does sound counterintuitive.
Insurance.
You're right,
and it did. Went back when I was a kid. It sounded very kind, and so I went, well, wow, that's terrible. And of course, you know, a lot of cars got broken into when I was a kid, so it was a lot easier to break into them.
That's true.
So we all had change in the ashtray. You don't even have ashtrays anymore. I don't know where you hold your change. So that was the number one reason for me to have it, actually. Mm-hmm. But from what you're telling me, if it is insane to be a tenant and not have tenant's insurance.
Right. I don't think it's a cost issue. I just think people just don't think it's necessary. It doesn't cover anything. But the coverages can be real and very important.
Excellent. And, you know, landlords out there, it behooves you, I think, to insist your tenants have insurance. And what we have seen, quick kind of tangent question on this, when we have in leases seen landlords require tenants to have insurance, they also talk about liability insurance then back to the landlord. Mm-hmm. Is that about right?
Yes, right. So you're renting someone's home. You want to make sure that besides you have insurance, that the owner of the property, their interest should be covered. So you want to make sure there's some wording. And some companies will extend the wording to cover the landlord. However, we always do recommend that the landlord have their own separate policy, because there could be a situation that, you know, we don't want to get into a match where who's covered, not covered. So we always recommend the owner of the property maintain a policy. And in addition, the tenant's policy either list the owner's additional interest or show proof of that insurance.
What does a tenant need to provide to an insurance company to get renter's insurance?
Just the basic information as far as, you know, name, date of birth.
Provide a copy of the lease?
Not necessary, but it could help in case there's something there that maybe is unique.
Okay, because I know there's folks out there who are renting month to month or had a lease 10 years ago and stayed on and never, mm-hmm. you know, don't have a current lease. So they don't even need to produce a lease to get insurance.
It's correct. You don't have to.
Yeah, you know, that's eye-opening stuff out there. And especially, you know, as we're sending our children off into the world, a lot of folks I know, again, in my kind of contemporaries, their kids are getting out of college and heading out into the real world. And that's something they really should be aware of, and they should be doing for their kids, or their kids should be doing for themselves.
And you bring up a good point about having your children renting an apartment somewhere. Now, it depends who signed that apartment on the lease. So if the parents are signing the lease, then that just, you know, we just need to be aware of that to make sure that, number one, the parents are going to be protected since their name is on the lease. So, again, just something we always look into, and just make sure you have that conversation with your insurance professional, just to make sure that, you know, you're covered correctly.
And that's great food for thought, because now I'm thinking about the kids who aren't aren't out of college, but the ones who are just heading back to college, and maybe they're not freshmen, so they're allowed to live off campus, right?
That's a big move in
mm-hmm. every kid's lifetime. And so if their parents are co-signers or guarantors on their lease, they need to make sure their homeowner's insurance knows about that.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, see, I'm learning so much from you today, Paul. I love it.
I'm blessed.
I want to take a segue now to talking about homeowner's insurance as it relates to either homeowners who are selling their house or people who are buying a house and how they may be looking at homeowner's insurance. So if I'm a seller, I've hired Park Sterling Realty to represent me in the sale of my home. And with the sale of my home comes public open houses and broker open houses and appointments. And there will be people I don't know, theoretically, right, coming in and out of my house, frequently, hopefully mm-hmm. frequently. Mm-hmm. Does that affect my homeowner's insurance? Is there anything I need to do?
So you bring up a couple of good points. So let's just say the person is selling their home. They still reside in the home, so it's an owner-occupied home, not a problem there. Your homeowner's policy would respond. You have your basic liability, and we often recommend umbrella coverages just to make sure that there's some extra protection. But now that's one scenario. Now the other scenario is the home is vacant. Nobody's living in there. It's totally empty. That's another issue that the insurance companies have certain clauses in there that say, you know, we're not going to cover any claims that occur in a vacant home if the home is vacant for 30, 45, 60 days. So, again, it's important to have that conversation with your insurance agent to make sure that, listen, is this insured properly? Do I need to make any changes, adjustments, or notify the company?
So thinking with my realtor hat on, if we represent sellers who have, who when they listed the property, were fully occupied, and in between that time and today, they've moved to their new home, and the current property is unoccupied but still on the market, mm-hmm. and I don't know if they've called their insurance company. I'm certainly not going to make that call. It's not my house. Anybody who's coming in and out as it's part of the purchasing process, if there's a problem, someone trips and falls, and they haven't told their insurance company that the house is now vacant, is that a big problem?
It could be. Again, it's the situation is the length of time. Most companies will respond in that situation, but depends on the length of how long it's vacant and totally unoccupied.
Several months.
So that could be an issue because the company could come back and say, listen, there's not a stick of furniture. There's nobody been living in this home for 6 months, 3 months. This is a vacant home. It needs to be insured correctly. And there are ways to do that. You know, put the company on notice. They may put an endorsement on the policy just to make sure that everybody's aware of it. There could be a surcharge, or the company may say, listen, this is not what we insure. We didn't intend to insure a vacant home when we started this policy, and that's not our intention, and we're not charging the premium for that. So that you need to look elsewhere.
That's really good to know from a seller's perspective, which actually just really a whole new topic for a second. Second homes. Mm-hmm. So vacation homes, second homes that are where there's people in them maybe seasonally or weekends. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Sure. A lot of companies don't have a problem insuring those second homes. It depends on what state they are and where they're located. If it's beachfront, it could be an issue from a windstorm coverage. But most companies don't have a problem doing the second homes. And they will also ask, there's again lots of discounts for second homes that have low temperature scenarios that they can be detected if they have cameras. So companies look for some added protection on those homes that are vacant maybe 4, 5, or 6 months out of the year.
And if I had a second home or even a home locally that was unoccupied, would having a property manager help me out?
Yes. A lot of times the company will ask, well, who's the person that's going to be looking at this house? You're in Texas and you're selling this home here. Or you're now in Texas and you're going to be selling your home here in Bronxville. Who's watching over the home? Who's taking care of it while you're not there? So that's a good question. A lot of companies will want to see some sort of representation there.
Great. And, as an aside, folks who are listening, the person who should be in charge of your vacant home shouldn't be your realtor. Because we don't want to see good things happen to your house, but because the liability for us is so great mm-hmm. to be in charge of your home and the liability for you to have someone who's really not, that's not what we do. Mm-hmm. We market and manage the sales, but we don't manage the property itself. So that was kind of my aside.
Good point.
Excuse me. Talking about now from the buyer's seat. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about sellers, and I take it, let's just recap. It's not a big deal to have public open houses, broker open houses, and showings, and people coming in and out. Your liability insurance covers that.
All good, yep.
All good, great. And that if we do unoccupy the house, so to speak, for more than 30 days, we should definitely be telling our homeowner's insurance policy to keep us safe.
Yes.
Okay, so now I'm a buyer. And one of the costs, we do, there's an anagram Anagram? Yeah, Anagram in real estate about what it costs to own a house. And that's PITI, P-I-T-I. And PITI is principal, interest, tax, and insurance. And that's the number people kind of look at to get their monthly nut to decide if this maybe is the house for them or not. So principal and interest, of course, having to do with their mortgage, taxes having to do with property taxes, and insurance being homeowner's insurance. And I think we don't look at that carefully enough with our buyer clients sometimes, because there can be things that about a house that might benefit or hurt them when it comes to time to insure it. So, like, for example, do you guys care what style home it is?
The style home only would come into the cost to rebuild situation. So if a home is sort of a typical, say, you know, newer, to say his square box type home, that may be less expensive to build than a stone Tudor with lots of detailing. So from that standpoint, the style of home will have an effect on how much coverage would be on the home usually.
And therefore how much it would cost.
Correct. That's right.
Okay. So, you know, and I'm going to talk about Southern Westchester because that's where we're sitting. So Southern Westchester has a lot of older, what we call pre-war or antique inventory, antique houses with stones and woodwork and slate roofs and all of that stuff. So just for a general rule, I'm not trying to talk anybody out of buying a specific type of house or any location. Those could be or are more to insure because the materials cost so much that went into building it.
Yes, good point. So a home right? that it's an older home, say pre-war in the 20s or 30s, that has a lot of woodwork, not just sort of a plywood floor, but has old, you know, pine and oak floors, or, you know, those tend to be more to reconstruct. Therefore, you insure them for a higher amount. And so when you insure it for a higher dwelling amount, then the cost of the insurance would be higher.
Okay, that's really good to know. But you guys don't care if it's a ranch versus a colonial because the number of staircases or anything
nope.
weird like that.
No difference there.
Okay, and a garage versus having no garage?
Nope. The policy would respond whether the garage was attached or if it's detached. It's called other structures. That could be there to help rebuild that home. So if you do have a very large, say, a separate pool cabana that's got two stories and a kitchen and a bathroom and that, then you may have to address that to make sure that's insured properly.
And earlier we talked about not just materials, but systems. Mm-hmm. So a buyer, I imagine, would want to see more updated systems in general. Look, every buyer we work with, they don't want to see a house with knob and tube wiring.
Right.
They want to see up-to-date wiring. And so, but buying a house that did not have up-to-date systems and wiring would be more expensive to insure because the liability of something going wrong is greater.
Right. The companies will look at that. They will, if you have a game plan to say, listen, we're going to switch it in a couple of months, companies may be more willing to go on to that risk. Otherwise, it may have to fall to a carrier that sort of would more deals in that type of scenario where it's a higher risk.
I want to talk more about that. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk selling, buying, homeowning, and how to read your policy. So stay tuned. You're listening to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro.
An independent lifestyle with a little less work and a little less worry. It's what you want, right? Wartburg offers independent and assisted living, along with specialized memory care for those with Alzheimer's or dementia. From adult daycare and home care to inpatient and outpatient rehab, shorter long-term care, and much more, the services Wartburg offers are all backed by our 150-year reputation of providing quality care to seniors. Call to learn more, 914-699-0800, or visit wartburg.org. Wartburg, named one of the best nursing homes in New York State in 2017 by U.S. News & World Report.
We're back.
Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
Welcome back. You're listening to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. I, of course, am Leah Caro, and we are broadcasting live from Park Sterling Realty's headquarters on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. Park Sterling Realty serves Westchester County, Putnam, and Bronx counties. And today we are really pleased to have Paul Ranieri with us from DC Ranieri Insurance Agency. We have been talking about all things homeowner insurance related, and boy, have I learned a lot. And Paul, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we've spent a good long time talking about things that impact your homeowner's insurance discounts, really cool, sneaky little discounts. So, and we've been talking about things that could be harmful to your homeowner's insurance, and we've talked about hurricanes, and we've talked about if you're selling your house, what that might mean to your insurance. And when we just left off, we were talking about if you're a buyer, and things that may or may not come into play when you're deciding what house you want to buy, insurance related. And so the style of the home, and we talked about, and the age of the home and things like that. If you didn't hear any of that stuff, I want to urge you to go to westchestertalkradio.com and look for Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro, and you'll be able to get that podcast in a day or two. Or you can always go to the iTunes store and download it that way, because there was really so much information that we've already gone over that is just absolutely essential for homeowners to know. And not just homeowners of single-family houses, but co-ops, condos, multifamily houses, and even renters. So there's been a lot of great information today, so thanks for that. Going back to home buyers, I'd always kind of heard another myth. Earlier we were talking about myths and busting them, but it's true or not true, having a fire hydrant on the property is a savings on your homeowner's insurance.
So that is a myth. Having it within a certain distance, and most companies look at it usually within 500 or 1,000 feet, that's what they will require. So most municipalities in this area will have a hydrant. So you'd receive the same discount whether it's on your front lawn or 500 feet away.
And most properties around here, I would imagine, have one within 500 feet
anyway. That's right.
What about, so myth? Busted. So what about having a fire department nearby? Is it matter if my house is 3 miles from the nearest fire department or 6 miles from the nearest fire department?
So mileage, distance, will, if it's paid or not paid, volunteer or not. So those are factors that could influence the response time. So the companies look at, you know, where's the water source, number one, and what's the response time? So if a fire department is going to take half an hour because you're on some dirt road up there, you know, chances are your home is toast after that. So they will look at that. The
literally.
Distance. Yeah. Now look and see, you know, where the distance is, where's the water source that they can fight the fire with.
So all things that homeowners should be aware of. That doesn't mean they should not enjoy a house in the country if that's what they, if that's their thing. But just the ways to think about what it might mean to their insurance.
And one thing that comes up as a new buyer that we didn't touch on, but so you're going to purchase a home. The insurance companies do what's called a CLUE report, which is a claims report on that location. So that sometimes could be helpful when you're a home buyer and all of a sudden, yes, you haven't had any claims and you're fine, but you've noticed or your agent says, gee, there's been 6 claims on that home for, you know, water pipes, for, you know, this and that. So, you know, that may be something to think. There could be some water, hidden water or mold issues that are in the home that you weren't aware about or that somebody didn't know. So, you know, we just try to educate, you know, education I think is important. So just to make sure that, and you'll be probably advised of that by your agent that says, gee, you know, this home sustained 6 claims or 1 claim or something, just so you're aware of it. So.
And actually, I am aware of CLUE reports, but I'm really glad you brought them up because this is from the realtor seat. So when we had heard about them, because CLUE reports, at least in my world, are 10 years old. Does that seem about right?
Yeah, it's right. It's a new phenomenon. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when it was first introduced to me, it had to do with, it's not the person who's living in the house or the former owner or the current owner, the new buyer, but the history of claims on the house itself. So that theoretically, and this is going to probably sound worse than it should, but theoretically a new homeowner is going to be paying premiums based on perhaps bad behavior of past homeowners in regard to the house and claims associated with it.
So that can happen, but we try to have that conversation with the company and say, listen, this was nothing to do with the new owner. It was a fire that started. Maybe it's an electrical fire. The wiring's all been redone in the home. So the companies, you know, most of them are, you know, common sense. They'll look at that and say, okay, you know, you're right. That's not. Or the claim resulted. It was maybe a dog bite situation in the home. Again, that claim follows. Well, there's no dog. So, you know, there's no issue here. Or it was a hurricane, Superstorm Sandy. You know, that wasn't their fault. So, you know, the companies at least are fairly common sense about it to see what the cause of it is and to see if there was some sort of negligence and if the home is still now has been totally repaired and rebuilt, then great. All good to go.
So should that insurance agent be talking about this CLUE report with the buyer, the new client to you folks, before the policy is written? I mean, you sound like you really like to educate people. When should they be having this conversation?
Yeah, I think that conversation, when a person signs the contract, they know they're going to go...
The insurance contract. You mean the purchase contract?
The purchase contract.
Okay.
You know, assuming, because I've not seen where a CLUE report precludes an insurance company from insuring it. They just want to get some more detailed information on what happened. Because they're not trying to hold this against the new owner. So we'll just have that conversation with them. So they sign the contract on the home. We start the process and say, you know, just so you're aware, there's been some issues there or, you know, or Just education.
You know, there's a new tool available to realtors in this office, which is, you know what Carfax is?
Yes.
All right. Yep. There's a new product called Housefax, and does very much the same thing that Carfax did. And we are able to run a history if a consumer would like us to. And I believe that it does include a CLUE report. And so that's kind of a really new
wow,
tool.
That's news to me. Cool.
To the public, which might be really beneficial when it comes to choosing a house, mm-hmm. and then, you know, and knowing what they're getting into.
That's correct. Yep, I agree.
Yeah, and so when we were doing breaks and stuff and going to commercial, we were having all these offline conversations because, you know, everybody in the room, and there's five or six of us, everybody's got their own, you know, personal question about insurance, and everybody's, you know, but what if, and this happened to me, and all those little anecdotal stories. And, you know, the kind of it drilled down to was, what does your policy say? And that's what came on where we fell back on a lot of those answers just now. And so I do want to talk about that because shame on me. I am one of those people who, when they are issued their homeowner's insurance policy or their car insurance, lots of things, frankly, especially big documents, I'm a busy chick, and I don't read them. Shame on me.
You're not alone.
I know I'm not alone. So that's why I want to address this. So let's talk about what, you know, what is in your homeowner's insurance policy that people really, really need to be aware of, so there's no shocks down the road, and so that they're it's like managing their expectations.
Yeah, good point. What I think is so important is the education piece. You just want to have people have an understanding of things that are covered and not covered. I think that's just a basic fundamental conversation that has to be engaging with the client, because you want to make sure that there's no surprises. I hate surprises, and clients I'm sure don't want to be involved in that. So what we just try to do is work on the education piece, say, listen, these are the things that are covered. These are not covered. These are scenarios we've seen. Let's read the policy. Let's go over. Are you aware that this is your coverage? This is your amount of fire insurance. This is your deductible, whether it be for a storm or if it's a pipe burst. You want to know so that you're not surprised, we're not surprised, and everybody can be settled happily.
So is it true that often the deductible is subject to change depending on, let's use the example of a hurricane. Certainly not something a homeowner can control, but that it does in fact change their coverage, and that it is in your policy if you read it. Is that right?
That's true. Windstorm deductibles, hurricane deductibles are becoming much more fluid these days. So people that lived along the coast, always sort of had that. That was sort of a no-brainer with the insurance companies. But now we're seeing that windstorm deductibles, and what I mean by that is, so you could have a windstorm deductible. You have your regular deductible in your home. So your home is insured for $500,000. You have a $1,000 deductible. So if there's a fire, a hurricane, you pay the first $1,000. The company pays after that. On a hurricane deductible, and some companies have 2-5%. So now that 5% deductible, now you have a $25,000 deductible on your $500,000 home. So there's a windstorm or hurricane that every company has a certain classification where it fits. And then now all of a sudden you're not sitting with a $1,000 deductible on that hurricane, it's $25,000. And if you're aware of that and you know about it, that's fine. But we're finding that clients that say, I didn't know that. Nobody told me that. So.
Right, and it really goes to read your policy. So
yes.
Shame on me, and I should be learning from this, because when you're having something devastating happen to your home as a result of a hurricane or a wind event, that's bad enough.
Oh, sure.
So then to learn, and it was there all along, but then to learn that what you thought was your deductible is really just a tiny fraction of what your deductible could be, and to learn that after the fact, it's just got to be that much more frustrating for them and for you.
Yes.
Because I'm sure then you can end up with unhappy clients.
Right. No, we don't want unhappy. And the other thing I would suggest, too, is now in today's day and age, take photos, take images of the entire house inside and out, so that in the event of a catastrophe, you're not going to remember the couch, the chair, the little vase you had on that table in a serious fire. So think about spending some time, capturing all those rooms, just go through each one so that in the event of a situation that's catastrophic, you're not going to sit there and remember everything. You'll just have photos of everything. So.
That's a great idea. So before accidents happen, before tragedy strikes, take the time inside and out, photograph your home, and then, you know what, it's probably not a bad idea to print those out and keep them somewhere, mm-hmm. because when the electricity goes out, you may not be able to get to them.
That's true.
When your phone dies and your iPad dies and your mm-hmm. laptop dies, right?
That's true.
And keep them somewhere. And so that's great advice. Any other kind of last thoughts you can tell us, you know, besides folks, when I tell you read your policy, do it. Not that they're trying to be slick and get anything over on you, but it's, you know, you're signing on, you're paying the premiums every month, know what's in your policy. And I've just learned some ways that I'm going to go home and about to save myself some money.
That's important.
What
read
else,
the policy.
What else didn't we talk about that you want everybody to know?
Oh, good question. So I think the windstorm is important. I think documenting, photographing, and think about scheduling items. A lot of people inherit maybe some jewelry items that they didn't think about insuring. Now all of a sudden they have this very beautiful diamond ring that they want to insure, or they thought was insured because they have contents coverage. They should really just kind of get a look at the policy, make some calls, and to see the proper way to insure those items.
That's great. And if anything changed dramatically in their lives,
yes,
they got a dog, the dog passed away, they got a trampoline, they filled in the pool, anything mm-hmm. that changed, and any home renovations.
That's
might,
right.
That
renovations,
might
very
it.
Important. Yes.
So would it be fair to say that like once a year, everybody should just kind of take stock, if you know, figuratively and literally.
Yes, that's good. If it hasn't been any changes, then you know, every couple of years, every few years. But especially if there's anything life changing, definitely give a call.
Paul, it's been a breath of fresh air talking to you today.
Thank you.
And having you on the show. I've learned a lot. Matt and Jim are both nodding at me. They've learned a lot as
yep.
well.
He
knows he has. So again, if you've missed any of this or you want to hear it again, WestchesterTalkRadio.com, Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. This month's edition should be up as a podcast in 48 hours. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you next month.
Shark, Shark Creative.
Thank you, listener. Yes, Shark Creative is the company you think of for on-hold messages. If you want to hear how it helps, you can call Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, Durante Rentals, Michael Labriola Inc., Oak Ridge Staffing, Emma's Ale House, Northeast Environmental, or just go to sharkcreative.com and listen there. Meanwhile, we've expanded our services as your all-audio resource. On-hold messages, of course, production and placement of radio campaigns on the Pete and others too. And now we also have our very own internet radio station, Westchester Talk Radio. Look for us on Facebook at Westchester Talk. Have us come out to your next event, help you capture audio from your sponsors, associates, friends, bite into that first impression with Shark Creative. Everything audio. It just sounds better.
Shark Creative.